Our last case of the day is United States against Hobbs. Mr. Tassif.
Thank you, Your Honor. George Tassif, once again, for Charles Hobbs. This is a case where the district court denied Mr. Hobbs' motion to suppress evidence, where the complaint and affidavit for the search warrant.
Mr. Tassif, you can raise the podium. Mm-hmm. Switch is on the right-hand side.
Thank you very much.
Stop raising the podium.
I let it go and see how it went.
In this appeal,
your chin, though, stop.
Well, I believe it's high enough right now. In this appeal, Mr. Hobbs contends that the search warrant was tainted by the inclusion of illegally obtained evidence by police officers who conducted what the district court called a protective frisk without exigent circumstances or reason to believe that any occupants were within the residence who could have obtained evidence or destroyed it. Now, that inclusion of that reference in the paragraph of the complaint, which is appended to the brief, was that during this protective sweep of the residence, Investigator Cuvee observed what appeared to be an off-white powdery substance inside the residence, unquote. In this case, the police had Mr. Hobbs under surveillance, claiming that he was a suspect in an unsolved homicide and that they believed there was probable cause for his arrest for that homicide. Moreover, they believed that he had a suspended license on August 10th of 05.
Was his license suspended the day he was arrested?
We don't know. All we know from this record is that Detective Oberle, who conducted the investigation, testified for the government at the suppression hearing and said only that sometime during the course of his investigation, from October of 04 through August of 05, that he checked on unspecified times and learned that the license was suspended. I respectfully submit that that prong for the stop of Mr. Hobbs' vehicle is not based upon probable cause or reasonable suspicion of any motor vehicle offense that would have allowed the police to seize him as they did in the parking lot of the Walgreens drugstore, some 3 to 4 blocks from the residence. Also, at this stage of the case, when the police had made their seizure at the Walgreens, back at the house, the only evidence the government agents had when they saw Mr. Hobbs get into this rental car was that he appeared to have crossed the front yard of the residence. On cross-examination, they did not contend that they saw him exit from the residence or that they saw him in any way alight from the residence. He crossed the yard into the rental car and was arrested some 3 to 4 blocks away for possessing what the agents confirmed was 24 grams of powder cocaine. At this stage, the government then sought the issuance of a warrant for drugs. And during the process of preparing their warrant application to the state court judge, the officers who were at the scene of the house observed a black female exit the residence. They followed her. They believed that she had compromised their integrity and their identity and therefore decided to seize her outside the residence, take her house key, and go inside to conduct the protective frisk while other agents were back at the Peoria Police Department preparing the warrant papers. And it's during that process that Officer Cuvee sees this off-white powdery substance inside the residence. That fact then is communicated to Officer Vanderhyde, who is the affiant officer in the case. Judge Mim found that that was not a proper protective frisk, and therefore that reference to the warrant creates the issue that we are contending. Judge Mim dismissed the argument, though, contending or stating that the reference to the off-white powder was cumulative and it thereby did not effectively taint the remaining evidence in the warrant affidavit. We respectfully disagree on the grounds that that reference to the discovery of the off-white powder in the residence was the only reference as to there being any belief of drugs being inside the residence. The only other references to the defendant being suspected of drug activity were anonymous tips referenced in the body of the complaint that Mr. Hobbs was selling drugs in the area. Again, the residence was not in any way referenced in the affidavit. And that secondly, that it is common practice, the officer avers in the affidavit, for narcotics traffickers to keep cocaine and other related items involving cocaine trafficking at their residence. However, in this case, there is no statement within the warrant that would identify a factual basis for believing that cocaine would be inside the residence. And therefore, we respectfully submit the warrant read as a whole by excising that portion from the complaint that Judge Mim found to have been improperly obtained through the protective frisk yields a complaint that does not establish probable cause. The government argued for the district court that the good faith exception of Leon would nonetheless save this warrant. We respectfully submit that the majority of circuit courts of appeal that have addressed the application of Leon good faith to this particular factual context, where illegally obtained evidence is included in a warrant application, have rejected such a defense. And therefore, the court erred when it denied the motion to suppress and the evidence that we sought to suppress in this case. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tessa. Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you again. I agree with Mr. Tassett that there isn't information as to whether or not Mr. Hobbs had regained his license by the time he was arrested in this case. So the only evidence in the record is that his license had been suspended. The more powerful grounds to arrest him, however, was the murder case. And throughout the brief and in the reply brief, Mr. Tassif makes a statement that the girlfriend's statement doesn't, quote, bear any indicia of reliability to support any degree of trustworthiness. Well, the girlfriend, mind you, knew information about this murder that was not public. Obviously, the most profound information she knew was where the murder weapon was located. And, of course, it had already been found at that very location. That's a pretty strong indicia of reliability. In addition, she knew where the murder had been committed, on the back stairwell, which was also not public information. And then finally, she knew how he had been murdered, that he'd been shot several times, which also was not public information. So I would say that there was pretty strong indicia of reliability to support the trustworthiness of her statement. And that statement, along with the other corroboration, along with the fact that the police had determined that Mr. Hobbs was with Mr. Hargis on the night of the murder, that they were to engage in a drug deal, and that Mr. Hobbs had a prior record for crimes of violence, substantially supported the arrest in this case and probable cause to believe that Mr. Hobbs was responsible for that murder.
What ultimately has happened, Mr. Hartzler, on the murder?
I don't believe there's anything in the record, as you know.
I didn't see anything. I just wondered
if you...
It was an oddly curious question, I take it.
You saw that he got 360 months in this case.
Right.
I do not know whether the state has decided to prosecute him or not.
And then on this, the Leon, well, you're going to get to your next issue, but I am curious what impact, if we were to agree with counsel and say there was no good faith, what impact that would have on his sentence and his sentence calculation?
If you found that there was no good faith and that this warrant had to be thrown out?
Yes, the conviction.
It would reduce... We would end up with the 24 grams of powder as opposed to the 50 grams of crack that were found in the house. And that, Judge Easterbrook can probably do the calculation better than I. would...
He's got an adding machine, so he's ahead of
him. Well, it's going to be a offense level 37. I think he's probably going to be an armed career criminal, I believe. But I assume that that amount would eliminate the mandatory minimum because I believe the prior offenses, I think, my best recollection is, they're not prior felony drug offenses. They were crimes of violence. So he'd be subjected to the guidelines and whatever that would... It would calculate out pretty high if he indeed is an armed career criminal. But I hope the court does not need to get to the good faith argument because I believe that really the issue in this case is the attenuation or the independent source doctrine in terms of evaluating whether or not the sweep of the house or the information that was obtained from the sweep of the house and was included in the affidavit was such that it so tainted this affidavit that the court could not have found probable cause to search the house without it. And if the court applies the standard that we know from case law, there is no dispute that the agents had already decided to seek the warrant. That's the first prong of the test. And I don't hear from defense counsel throughout this proceeding any indication that the information from the sweep of the house prompted the agents to go get the search warrant. They were already preparing the search warrant affidavit at the time the sweep was conducted. So the only issue really is, did that illegally obtained information or evidence affect the decision of issuing the warrant? Well, as the district court found, it was almost insignificant. And to respond to Mr. Tassif's point, it's almost as though his expectation is that we would have to have an informant, as we did in the last case, go into the house and actually observe the contraband in the house before we'd have probable cause. Yes, Mr. Hobbs was seen walking across the front yard of this house, but the affidavit establishes that that's where he lived, that's where he was on parole. It was in the morning. We know that his girlfriend walked away from the house, presumed inferentially looking for him. There was every reason to presume that he came out of that house, got into his car, and very shortly after that, two or three blocks later, he was found to have 24 grams of cocaine in his possession. There was every reason to believe that a search of the house would uncover additional contraband, as of course it did. So I think that the court can resolve the case without ever getting to the good faith issue. But if we reach the good faith issue, I disagree with Mr. Tassif that the case law indicates that, you must deny any good faith because of the tainted information that was included in the affidavit. That's not the case with the various courts of appeals decisions that have addressed the issue. All of those cases involve information on which the warrant was premised. I mean, essentially, it combines the attenuation with the good faith. And in this case, if we combine them, I think, again, of course, our position is that, there was attenuation. This didn't affect the issuance of the warrant, just as the district court found, and it didn't affect the good faith of the officers. So should you get to good faith, I think that we should prevail because clearly the officers acted in good faith reliance on the proper issuance of this warrant. If there are no additional questions, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hartzler. Anything further, Mr. Tassif? Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.